Lynn Sullivan Whiting. Lynn Sullivan Whiting was the fourth son and the sixth child born to Edwin Marion and Anna Maria Isaacson Whiting. He was born November 5, 1893, at Mapleton, Utah. His sister Martha claims the privilege of being the first to hold him. He was placed in her arms as she sat by the fire. She said he was very fair and always had a pleasant smile. From his early childhood, his health bothered him. His mother would sit up many nights and sing lullabies to him. Martha says mother's voice, so sweet and low, was more like an angel singing. It showed so much love. He was a grown man when the doctors in Los Angeles finally told him what was wrong. The small opening between the upper and lower part of his stomach was defective and was spasmodic, making it almost impossible for the food to pass through this narrow opening. He was not coddled or spoiled by his parents because of his health, but undoubtedly received extra, loving attention from both his parents and his brothers and sisters. He was taught to be thrifty and honest, and the merits and satisfaction that comes from hard work and all the fine qualities that were to shine forth in a short but full life. He never lacked playmates. He could always think up new games. As a young boy, he liked to make little carts and wagons for the children. His first teacher was Leela Kemp, and he thought a lot of her and did well, but he missed some school because of his bad health. This was to be a stumbling block in his education, but he learned many other important things besides the three R's. He always had a winning way with animals, especially horses. The first horse he really owned was called Navi. A Navajo Indian had come by the home and wanted to sell his mare. Lynn wanted the pony so much that his father and mother finally bought it for $3 and a 5-pound bucket of honey. Lynn loved his horse, but she wasn't very gentle and he was thrown several times. However, he could always talk his brothers and sisters into keeping quiet about it. He feared his parents might take the horse away. Navi only had two colts. One was called Old Minute. He was special to all the family, but mostly to Lynn. He was very gentle and never objected to how many children rode him at the same time. If one fell off, he would stop and wait for him to get back on. The other colt died when it was 2 years old. Old Minute was a favorite winner at the races. Lynn liked working out of doors and often helped with the bees. He looked after the cattle and hauled lumber with teams and wagons from the first old mills to St. John's. Lynn was also a great hunter. His brother said he tracked like an Indian. He always brought in a share of turkey and deer. One year he won a gun as first prize for bringing in the biggest deer, awarded to him by A.B. Schuster Company in Holbrook. It weighed 172 pounds, dressed. His father bought an old Flanders automobile, one of the first in town. Lynn loved to work on this car and wanted to take it to the sawmill in the mountains to work on it, but he ended up having to pull the car up there with a team of horses. When it was time to come back, the old Flanders made the return trip under its own power. When the new automobiles were just coming off the assembly line, Lynn had a chance to go to Chicago with Herbert A. Berry in 1915. While there, he stayed with his sister Martha and her husband Frank Brown, who was going to medical school. He enrolled in mechanics school, which prepared him for working on the new automobiles. This was a skill which was worthwhile, as it enabled him to work in Whiting's mechanic shop when he came home. He owned one of the first new cars in the area and ran a taxi service between Holbrook, Springerville, and St. John's. He later was owner in a trucking line between Los Angeles and Holbrook. Soon after returning home from Chicago, he married Lola Gladys Waite, daughter of John William Waite and Alpha Ennis Lamson Waite. Gladys was very young in years, but she was mature for her age. She had lost her mother when she was 5, and had the responsibility of helping to care for her father and her brothers and sisters. They were married in St. John's by W. D. Rencher, then they left Holbrook on the train to go to Salt Lake City, Utah, where they were sealed in the temple. When they were married, Ethel gave Gladys a silk kimono or house coat. She had never had one before, and she says today that stands out in her mind as the prettiest thing she had ever owned. But the thing she liked best was a little gray suit she wore for years and years that Ethel gave her. Lynn gave his young wife a beautiful doll their first Christmas together, Glyda's very tender age was often the source of much teasing for her in-laws. While visiting her husband's folks, she was often jokingly told to sit at the table with the other children, or go play with the children, while we grown-ups visit. Lynn and Gladys liked to have his brothers and sisters and their families visit them. Their home became a favorite meeting spot for the uncles, aunts and cousins. Gladys was famous, and still is, for her delicious meals. In those days her raisin pie was a favorite with everyone. Lynn loved to have Ray, Kay and Lee come to see him. How he would have enjoyed Rex and Wayne as they grew up. Effie, I think, was the favorite niece, probably because they had so much in common, their poor health. Lynn was an exceptional storyteller. He was known far and wide for his humor. Grover Brown once said, "Before I can fully comprehend how funny a situation is, I must hear Lynn Whiting give an account of it. He can make it funnier than it really is." People still speak with pride and enjoyment of his stage acting talent. He loved to act and occasionally some of his family would work with him. He was the Rudolph Valentino of St. John's, and could play serious dramatic parts and comedy equally well. Oftentimes, he would ad-lib or add lines that would have pleased the original author. He played the lead role in many plays. Two of his favorites were Oliver Twist and The Two Orphans. He was talked into going to Hollywood to try out his talent for acting. He was very reluctant, but he finally gave in. When the director asked him to try out his act, he was at a loss. He had not been told he was to prepare a special act for the tryout. Anyway, he had other interests and they didn't include Hollywood and all its glamour. He made friends easily, and was well known for his wise decisions and judgments in business matters. He loved to go to auctions and always came home with a bargain. How much fun we'd have when he brought home one of the unclaimed express trunks he bought. Once he said as we opened up a trunk, that he hoped he never got one with a body in it. Along with all his other talents, he was a good farmer. He worked hard and his place on the hill showed the fruits of his hard work. He had a beautiful stand of alfalfa, also corn. He kept bees, had a peach orchard and the first nursery in St. John's. He had milk cows, turkeys, cattle, horses, sheep, and even goats until they got in his car and ate all the upholstery, carpet and anything else that wasn't fastened down. Lynn had one of the first silos in St. John's. He had a beautiful melon patch one year, but was having a lot of trouble with melon thieves. Finally, he announced to the family that he had a plan to catch them. He knew they always escaped over the lower ditch, so he strung a wire across the ditch bank so as they ran, they would catch their toe or feet on it, then he could catch them. The goats got out one night, and while he was chasing them he was tripped with his own trap, and the wire came down and was not replaced. Lynn was told by a lawyer that he had a photographic memory. He was in a chariot race in St. John's one year, that will always be remembered. Naturally he was the winner. Music was a source of great enjoyment to him. Some of his favorite songs were Casey Jones, The Old Rugged Cross, Jack O'Diamond and Coming Through the Rye. He especially enjoyed Roy Wilhelm and his guitar. In spite of the pain and discomfort he had to live with all his life, he never neglected his family. They were very close to him always, and everything he did was for them. He was a strict disciplinarian, but it was always tempered with justice. He was an honest man with his fellowmen as well as honest with himself and his principles. He never wanted to go anywhere alone. He called Mother the Minute Woman, as she could get her family and self ready for a long trip in a few minutes. He loved to travel with his family and nothing, not even school, kept him from taking his family with him when he wanted to go on a trip. He always said there were many things to be learned and ways to learn besides in a classroom. The life insurance company he had a policy with did something we consider a first. They paid him $8,000 on a $10,000 policy 2 years before he died. With this money, he took his loved ones on a long trip to Yellowstone National Park. He died February 11, 1936, 6 weeks after the death of his oldest son, Harvey. He left a memory for all who knew him to be proud of and for his family to live up to. He was a leader among his fellow men. People today, over 60 years later, are still remembering his humor, his honesty, his talents, and his integrity. What finer legacy can you leave to your loved ones than an honorable name and a family to carry on that legacy? Lynn Sullivan Whiting inherited this from his parents, and he in turn passed it on to his family. His wife Gladys, whose last child was born after Lynn's death, has been a wonderful mother to them all.